WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
CBS News Brief. Texas Governor Greg Abbott's ordered the civil arrest of Democratic lawmakers who fled the state to block passage of a new voting map favoring the GOP. CBS's Ed O'Keefe spoke with Republican State Rep Carl Tepper.
What would be your message to your Democratic colleagues who left town?
We still love you. We want to see you back in Texas.
But the Democrats say, not yet.
Massive wildfires are growing in the West, including one tearing through Los Padres National Forest north of L.A. Sacramento Metro Fire Captain Mark Nunez.
This is a very rapidly fast-moving fire through steep terrain with lots of dry vegetation. It takes a lot of personnel to take on something of this size.
Florida health officials say 21 people have gotten sick from E. coli by drinking raw, unpasteurized milk linked to the same farm. Six of them were under the age of 10. Seven have been hospitalized. You can only sell raw milk in Florida if it's labeled as pet food. CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
For 540 WAUK News, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. It's now been a week of haze. The area has been dealing with now a week of smoke from Canadian wildfires, leading to health warnings and air quality alerts. The current advisory runs through noon today, although it could be extended again. Officials are reminding people to take precautions, especially if you have breathing issues. In response to a statewide measles outbreak, the city of Milwaukee is now offering free measles vaccinations at local health clinics. Officials say only 75% of six-year-olds in Milwaukee have both recommended MMR shots, putting the city at risk as cases rise in Wisconsin. Nine cases have been confirmed up north in Oconto County. Mayor Cavalier Johnson says Milwaukee has 800 doses now available, with more on the way if needed. Over the past 4 years, Milwaukee police have rarely written tickets on Water Street. It's just 11 citations in that time frame, despite a heavy weekend presence. The tickets include 6 citations for curfew violations, 4 for loitering. The newest lawsuit Wisconsin has joined against the Trump administration has now been filed in court. Savannah Tolme Olson has the latest.
The state is part of dozens of these cases now challenging the federal government. This suit is over health care for trans kids. A week into his presidency, President Donald Trump signed an order restricting care for people under 19. Attorney General Josh Call says since then, the Department of Justice has subpoenaed providers, demanded private patient data, and suggested that providers could be charged with crimes. The lawsuit argues this order has no legal basis, and every National Medical Association says care is necessary for trans youth who face some of the highest suicide rates in the nation. 15 other states are part of this lawsuit.
And that's news on 540 WAUK. I'm Stuart J. Waddles. News at the top and bottom of the hour or anytime at waukradio.com.
The Brewers win again. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. A rainy night in Georgia. The Brewers and the Braves playing in the mist. Top of the fourth, two men on. And the Brewers' Isaac Collins at the plate. FanDuel Wisconsin.
On 3-2 on Collins. See if they send Yelich. He goes. And a swing and a drive to right field. This has hit a ton. It is gone for Collins. A three-run shot. The Brewers have the lead. Seventh home run of the year for Isaac Collins.
How about this kid, Isaac Collins?
The Brewers held on to win 3-1, their fourth win in a row, thanks to some great base running. Pat Murphy.
I still chalk it up to we base run, you know what I mean? William taking off 3-2 there. The threat of Yelly sealing there 3-2. Maybe it changed the pitch that they threw Collins. Who knows? But credit to Isaac. He put a great swing on a pitch.
NFL, the Packers' new starting defensive back, Nate Hobbs, out for at least the next 3 weeks after having knee surgery. The team hoping to have him back for the season opener against the Lions. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Reach, engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
We are going to have a little more of that hazy wildfire smoke out there again today. Otherwise, mostly sunny. Our high right around 81 this afternoon. Tonight, clear 67. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high near 82. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Current temp 62.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
Frank Anderson, who is the founder of Wisconsinology.com. You were great in the documentary. That's really exciting.
I'm really not as a documentary filmmaker because I get bored so quick. You have to really dig into your subject, and you got to show up every day, sometimes for years,
yeah,
to let a story unfold or to find a story. I'm good for one day.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Maggie Dawn.
Well, I'm off enjoying the sights and sounds of some of my favorite places in Wisconsin. Guest hosts are stepping in with sharp insights into Wisconsin politics and beyond. Don't miss these great conversations.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
A voice for real news and great conversation in Milwaukee. 540 WAUK.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
And welcome back. It is 8:06 on a Tuesday morning. It's August 5th, 8:05:25, and coming up, we will be talking to Chad Holmes from 98.9 WXCO about stories he's following in the Wausau area. And in our 8:30 half hour, we'll be talking to Shali Pittman, news director at Civic Media, about the 60th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act. I know, it seems like we just talked about the 60th anniversary of Medicare, Medicaid. It was a busy time in the summer of 65, making things happen that would be good for the nation as a whole. Obviously, those things have been under assault ever since then from a segment of the population trying to convince another segment of the population that the things that are good for them are actually bad for them. When they're not, they only help the small set of the population. But before I lose you, we will be talking all about what the attacks on the Voting Rights Act mean, even here in Wisconsin, with Shali Pittman coming up in just a bit. But first, let's get that updated forecast from meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Parker Olson is here as well, producing this fine shindig from Madison Studio A2, where if he had a window looking outside, and he does not, but
no.
You'd see the smoke beginning to dissipate out there. Brittany, what is your situation? I think I see something from your coming from your right that appears to be sunlight out a window. Or is that, do you actually?
I can see half and half. I can see the smoke kind of sitting there lower. And then I can see a blue sky if I look straight up. Now, I've got better air quality than a lot of cities in Wisconsin right now. I am at a moderate. Even Eau Claire, Green Bay, and Milwaukee are now at unhealthy for sensitive levels. So you're pushing that 100 to 150 AQI. It's starting to go up as we move into our afternoon. So my guess is this could be extended again through at least tomorrow afternoon. I don't see those winds starting to hit 15, 20 mile per hour until tomorrow afternoon as well. So,
but that change is coming.
Yeah, but
the
there
is.
Coming.
Okay. Keep hanging on.
That's
yes,
right.
Finally. Okay. So we've got a low pressure system that's building off in Wyoming, Colorado kind of area, and it is going to be moving in a warm front, right? So first it's going to kick up the winds, get that wildfire smoke out of here. Then it's going to heat us up, bringing in some muggy and humid conditions. In fact, it's going to get very hot and humid as we go into Friday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, pushing near 90 degrees on those days. So the comfortable dry conditions are changing. It's also going to turn into an active, wet, stormy kind of pattern too, especially this weekend. We've got a big cold front that wants to move through on Saturday. And also, like I said, that warm front moving in on Thursday. So two chances for rain moving by. And then, of course, temperatures changing. So upper 70s to low 80s today and tomorrow. And then that heat and humidity really starts to build. But the trade-off when we have the heat and humidity and the storms, no more wildfire smoke. So I suspect maybe 24 hours left of this, but it has been the longest stretch ever that we've ever dealt with for air quality alerts.
Yes, exactly. It's not been fun, shall we say. But again, it's out of our control. And you know, everybody should be coping with it as best they can. And eventually we'll get to open up the windows full time again. Just you know, as long as we get that before the snow falls.
Seriously. Or I'm going to be opening it while it's falling. I don't care anymore.
At that point, yes, if we don't have the smoke as an issue, I will absolutely take it. All right, Brittany. Right? Thank you very much. Have a great day.
You too.
All right. Let's turn now to Chad Holmes from 98.9 WXCO joining us as well. You can hear him throughout our morning show doing some of the local cut-ins, or you can catch on the Civic Media app as well, not to mention all the sports that he does. He will sometimes do play-by-play three games at a time just because he can. He's that good at this. And it's coming, isn't it? Play-by-play season for you once again.
It's actually a significant day because today is the first day of high school football practice.
Oh, yeah. So, was anybody up there doing stuff at midnight overnight?
No.
Okay, good.
I don't think so, at least.
Jimmy Kuska talked about that. He said there were some schools, you know, that actually do something at 12:01 because the rule says, you know, August 5th. It doesn't say when. So I was chiding them. I'm like, that's a little over the top. So I'm glad to hear that you're not aware of any by you.
No, but I'll be heading out later today and getting that first little dose of some football action. They're not going to be putting the pads together yet. They're just handing out equipment today and then starting that first practice. But it's an exciting time because a week from Friday is the scrimmages. And then 2 weeks from Friday, we will actually 2 weeks from Thursday, we'll be kicking things off. So not too far off.
No, not at all. It's funny because I can hear in your voice the relief when a season comes to an end, like you're going to get a little bit of time off. And then I can again hear in your voice, like, it's go time. It's time to get back on it. Which tells me the seasons are spaced almost just right, almost in a Goldilocks point for a guy like you and maybe for the coaches and everybody else as well.
Yeah, I think so. I think actually, I was actually talking to a current coach, I was interviewing in a different capacity, and I was saying that back in the past there used to be a little bit more time between the fall and the winter and the winter and the spring, and I think that was better. But nowadays they basically go together, and I think that's especially with the multi-sport athletes, that can be a lot on the plate, and they're asked to do a lot. So I think that it'd be nice to have a little bit more of a gap, but it is what it is.
Yeah, that's right. You deal, and that's what you do so well. What you've been talking about in some of the local reports there at WXCO.
This week has been so far a very positive week, and I was actually thinking about this. I have not mentioned Donald Trump once. I have not mentioned
how's that feel,
Robin Voss once or anything like that. I've been focusing on a couple of really, I think, positive stories. Yesterday, I had a young person from Athens, and she's actually Miss Marathon County, Wisconsin, but it was not about her pageant activities. She decided that she's somebody from Athens, and she decided that she wants to start an annual event where folks donate school supplies, and then she is able to give these school supplies on Saturday, August 18th to kids and families who are in need. And it was really just such a wonderful idea, wonderful thought. And so if you want to hear information on that or get information on that, go to our podcast page, go to WXCO.FM and go to our news segment and look at the morning report from yesterday. I got all sorts of information on how you can, number one, listen to our conversation. And then number two, also be able to contact Alicia Hoffman, who is in charge of this, and be able to make a donation and I think do something really, really good as we begin another school year. And so far today, and actually today, it's been one of those, you don't really want to do this where you have three different segments in the same interview, but based on my times here for the local reports, we've had two of the three segments where yesterday I had a chance to talk to a member of the WASA East faculty and also a family member of a former WASA East School District member, WASA East graduate named Laura Morris. She passed away in November of last year after a brave battle with cancer. Very young, just in her early 30s, two young children, a young husband. But also she was a soccer standout when she was at East. She went on to become a teacher at East and a member of the WASA School District team. And one of her coaches back when she was in school. And then one of her colleagues, when she returned to the Wausau School District, was able to decide that he wanted to, Ken Smith is his name, Ken Smith, soccer coach at East, teacher at East, in the East District, decided to start a GoFundMe to have a scholarship in honor of Laura Morris, given out to a Wausau East student who have been or are being affected by cancer. And along with Ken today, we're hearing the interview, Allison Oliphant is the sister of Laura Morris. So we have been going through that discussion, obviously with a longer discussion, and talking about the incredible courage that Laura Morris showed during this battle, because she was in public with it, talking mm-hmm. about it on her social media, and the way that she was able to really be a positive force in this battle that ultimately she passed away from last November. And this idea of having the scholarship is such a wonderful one, and the response has been truly amazing to see so many folks that are donating to this scholarship fund. And we're just trying to do our best to publicize this as well. And it's really been a couple of days where, you know, sometimes you feel like, you know, there's maybe not as much goodness as we once thought there was. But as Laura Morris's sister said in our conversation, it's just as she said, people are really good. People really, I think, in their souls are solid individuals who will do the right thing. And I just think that sometimes there are forces pushing against that at times. And I think it's nice to be able to do something to maybe push the other direction. And for folks, we still have one more segment to go at 8:22. So if you want to flip over to WXCO, you can hear the conclusion of our conversation. And also, you can hear it all in one sitting on our podcast page. And also, I'll have a link to our YouTube channel where we recorded it as well. And you can see and hear it coming up this morning as well.
You just get all that on the Civic Media app. You just go on the app and go look for WXCO. You can also go through the website civicmedia.us that enables you to have these good conversations. And I'm glad you're able to have them. I know that most of the time we get worked up about things in the news, and I got a list over here at any point if we want to get you all fired up. I got stuff.
I know. And the thing is, I know it's going to be soon enough. It's like because it's all part of the brew. I mean, that's what we try to do. But I think at certain points, it's really good not to just get into that mind space all the time, and to also be able to talk about, I think, things that really do affect our lives in a positive way here in Central Wisconsin.
Yeah, we need those occasional reminders, you know, that most people appear to be inherently good or capable of doing good things and will rally together at a time. My role, I've always seen, sometimes it's you know, encouraging people to focus on the good stuff, but oftentimes I kind of feel like a wet blanket and saying to people, yes, it's good to have the good news stories, but resist the temptation to turn your back on all of the, you know, the bad stuff that's going on out there, because that's how bad people, and they're out there, you know, get away with what they're doing, is they just expect people to get turned off and tune out and all of that. So by all means, embrace the good that's out there. But, you know, I appreciate that people still keep coming back here for that, like you said, that wide range of information. Yeah, there's local news, and yeah, there's politics, and yeah, there's also the good things that people are doing. But then invariably, we have to come back and talk about what's currently in the news, because, you know, that's how we stay healthy here. That's how we stay as a democracy.
And when I hear these stories, it kind of also reminds me of how incapable of doing the job Donald Trump is. Because just yesterday, again, he's using Pocahontas, a racial slur from the president of the United States. You put, you know, this balancing act, but he is opening up the door to our worst angels.
Yes.
And I think it's important as well to push back against that. So again, it truly is one of these where I think it all has to be discussed. I think there has to be a portion to talk about certain stories that are of the more positive realm. But boy, we do have to call out such behavior, because it's wrong. Basically, it's wrong.
We got a lot of real estate here from 6 a.m. onward, and we're happy to cover it all. And Chad Holmes, get what he's doing over at 98.9 WXCO in the Wausau area or on the Civic Media app or the website. Thank you, Chad. Talk to you a little later.
You bet.
All right. Their local update is next for some of you. And when we come back in about 15 minutes, Sholly Pittman will be here, Civic Media News Director, and we will talk about the Voting Rights Act here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Real news, great conversation from Milwaukee and beyond. 540 WAUK.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. With Governor Tony Evers choosing not to run for a third term, that means we're going to have the first open race for governor in 16 years. We already know who some of the candidates will be. On the Democratic side, Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez launched her campaign, and Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley said he's running. On the Republican side, Washington County Executive Josh Shulman and Southeastern Wisconsin Business Executive Bill Berrien are running. Many more are expected to join the race. And it's not just governor that will have an open race. We could see open races for attorney general, lieutenant governor, secretary of state, and state treasurer, too. Couple that with what's happening in the state legislature, no longer under gerrymandered maps, the year 2026 is going to bring a rather unique moment for voters in Wisconsin to determine the path forward on a fresh new era for the state. I know some can be wary of change, but let's embrace this as the real opportunity that it is.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area.
Can I sit in the front seat just this one time? Please, please, please.
No, not yet.
But why?
Because I love you, and you're just not ready yet. Now, get in the back so I can get you in your car seat, please.
Putting your kids in the right seat for their age and size is an act of love. Check that your kids are in the right seat at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Love protects. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
NFL Hall of Famer, College Football Hall of Famer, Mr. Joe Thomas. You were telling us a little bit about being drafted number 3. You skipped the draft.
I went fishing that day, and I never did it for anything other than I just much rather spend the day fishing with my dad, and I'm hoping that that's a story that keeps being told and gives people a reason. Like, you know what, instead of working today, I'm going to go fishing with my kid. I'm going to make the time because it's impactful. It's memories that they're going to remember for the rest of their life.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station, and on the app.
We are the National Park Foundation, and together with you, we're creating a future where every person, every generation, gets their chance at an unforgettable moment. Learn more at nationalparks.org/foundation.
Local news, weather, and sports on air and streaming on the Civic Media app. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WAUK. My name is Greg Bach. I'm back, and here's what's going on in southeastern Wisconsin this morning. If I said to you, hey, let me tell you about cryptocurrency, I would totally understand why you would get up and run away quickly. Thank goodness I'm not the one to talk about this topic. Instead, I'm going to turn it over to Maggie Dawn, host of The Maggie Dawn Show. She's not only a lawyer, but she's also an economist. And last week, she had a special episode dedicated to everything cryptocurrency and welcomed two special guests. Today and Thursday, you're going to hear from Bradley Rettler, who is a philosopher and a Bitcoin advocate. He's here to talk about some of the myths and help you understand why cryptocurrency isn't something we should fear, but in fact, get to know and possibly embrace.
I have to say I used to have an audible groaning sound in response to people that would try to talk to me about crypto. Hey, Maggie, what do you think about this Bitcoin? I just bought a bunch of Bitcoin. And I would audibly groan, roll my eyes, and start mumbling about central banks like some old fuddy-duddy who happens to be an economist. We're going to dispel some myths about crypto. We're going to explain what it is, how it works. We're going to get into some moral questions about, is it really a force for good? What are the potentials for abuses? What are the corruption potentials? How does Bitcoin, a specific type of cryptocurrency, or at least the network on which you buy the token known as a Bitcoin, more on that in a second, how does it differ from other cryptocurrencies? What the hell is the difference between a meme coin and a stable coin? And do they all pose the same sorts of moral questions? We have amazing guests. These are going to be longer interviews so that we can really get into it. I know you all have been just as annoyed as I have from time to time when I have to hurry my guests along because we've got somebody else coming in. But we got to begin the beginning with the basics. And folks, I ain't no expert about this, so I'm going to need some help and your patience. For those of you who may know a goodly bit more about this than I do, forgive me for any dumb questions I may ask, but I figure if I don't know, maybe one of you out there also doesn't know. With all of that, it is really my pleasure to introduce Associate Professor of Philosophy, yes, philosophy, at the University of Wyoming, and a fellow with the Bitcoin Policy Institute. Welcome, Bradley Rettler, to the Maggie Dawn Show. Thanks so much for being here, Brad.
Thank you for having me. Also, Homestead High School graduate, class of 2000. So
good
to be back up in the Badger State.
Yes, homegrown native son joining us here, which is makes it all the more special. You teach on all kinds of including intro philosophy classes, which I think you should get a gold star for, because I know I struggled in my intro phil classes, but about metaphysics and religion and culture, critical thinking, implicit biases. But you also have this growing body of work that specifically focuses on Bitcoin. So let's start here, Bradley. How the hell does a philosopher get interested in Bitcoin? They seem like two things that most people would not expect two areas of study to intersect.
For me, it goes back to the time I spent between living in Brookfield and living in Mequon, where I lived in Singapore. And on the weekends, I would go out shopping with the family, and there were these lines of people stretched out the door waiting to send money back home, international remittances, to their families. And they were paying 15, 20, 25% to the companies that would facilitate these. And people would have to walk, get the money, carry it home in cash, hoping that nobody else knew that they were carrying all this cash. And so when I heard about Bitcoin, I thought, this is a way of simplifying international transactions. People can receive it without anyone knowing. They don't have to travel to get it. This is going to revolutionize cross-border payments. And it just kind of went from there.
So fascinating. So much great learning, or at least the impetus to learning, happens when you travel. If you're blessed enough, fortunate enough to be able to do that, you get to see something that's totally different. And you're like, wonder what that's all about, right? A great, great origin story about this. So what is a cryptocurrency? How does it relate to blockchain? Is blockchain separate from crypto, and how do they work together?
Great questions. So Bitcoin was the first cryptocurrency, launched in 2009. And the goal of the inventor of Bitcoin was to try to figure out how to do digital cash without intermediaries. So normally when we handle digital money, we have some sort of app and we're trusting the people who run the app, usually a bank, but maybe PayPal or something like that. We're trusting them to know how much we have and to be able to facilitate transactions. And the goal of Satoshi Nakamoto, the creator of Bitcoin, was to be able to send money electronically without needing a centralized intermediary. And people had been trying to do that for a decade or so, but it never quite caught on. And Satoshi's idea was to use a blockchain where you would build block by block, and in that way, be able to prevent. The biggest problem for sending money electronically without a centralized intermediary was double spending. So I send you money, and then I also send the exact same money to someone else. And if you never talk to that person, neither of you know that I sent the exact same money to both of you. And so the goal was to try to figure out how to do this without requiring someone to keep track of everyone's balances. And so the goal was, the solution was to have this chain that grows as each transaction comes in and is such that you can't go back and redo any of the transactions that have already happened. It needs to keep growing, but you need to only be able to add, never change things in the past. So Satoshi uses the blockchain to do that, and cryptography is the way that that users' passwords, you can think of the things as passwords, are protected so that people can't steal your money.
Again, this is just a portion of the interview that Maggie Dawn did with Bradley Rettler on her show last week dedicated to cryptocurrency and their myths, morals, and money. That's the name of the episode, actually. You can go to civicmedia.us/shows, download that episode directly to your device, and listen to it whenever, wherever you want. You're listening to WAUK's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. For WAUK and Civic Media, I'm Greg Bach. I'll talk to you in 20 minutes. It's 8:29.
You're listening to 540 WAUK, Milwaukee's home for Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Come work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
For 540 WAUK News, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. Wildfire smoke from Canada is hanging over Wisconsin for the seventh day. The DNR says the air quality alert runs through noon today and again could be extended. Experts say the jet stream and a high pressure system are pushing the smoke down into the state, making the air unhealthy to breathe for some. There's a Milwaukee response to the measles. With cases now reported in Wisconsin, Milwaukee officials are giving out free measles shots at city clinics to try and stop the spread. With vaccination rates lower than the national average around here, health leaders called the situation urgent. Parents are being told to check their children's immunizations to protect against the highly contagious disease. A Milwaukee businessman is facing federal charges, accused of running a real estate investment scheme and spending most of the funds on himself. The SEC says Joseph Natoma and his companies raised almost $2 million from investors, promised big returns, but funneled over 80% of the cash to personal accounts instead of real estate deals. Court documents say Natoma exaggerated his real estate success and didn't own anywhere near the properties he claimed. The complaint notes his pitch targeted many in the Nigerian-American community. Natoma has asked for a jury trial as the case plays out in Milwaukee. More people are getting right to work. Melissa Kay has more.
A new report by the Wisconsin Policy Forum found the participation rate for apprenticeship programs is at a record high. According to the report, over 17,000 people participated in the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development's Registered Apprenticeship Program in 2024. The number of kids in the state participating in the program has more than doubled over the last few years, from 5,100 in 2019 to well over 11,000 this year. The program aims to address workforce shortages in fields like construction and healthcare.
And that's news on 540 WAUK. I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Fantastic Four: The First Steps was tops at the box office this past weekend, despite a bigger attendance dip than prognosticators initially thought. The film opened strong with $117 million last weekend, but dropped off by almost 70% to pull in only $40 million this past weekend. According to Variety, that is a sign the film has not connected with audiences beyond superhero fans. The film is sitting at $198 million domestically and cost $200 million to make. Coming in second place was The Bad Guys 2, which brought in just under $23 million, matching the original film's take on opening weekend in 2022. Audience scores were through the roof, which could mean the film will be in theaters for a while. Landing in third place with $17 million at the gate was the highly anticipated The Naked Gun. The film pulled in another $12 million overseas. Audience scores for this comedy are also strong. Superman and Jurassic World Rebirth rounded out the top five. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Join the family. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
We are going to have a little more of that hazy wildfire smoke out there again today. Otherwise, mostly sunny. Our high right around 81 this afternoon. Tonight, clear 67. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high near 82. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Current temp 62.
Matt and Air on Air.
Here's my gripe. MTV made it possible for really subpar performers to become stars. Madonna would never have been a star if it hadn't been for MTV and her grinding her way across the floor in a wedding dress.
See, that's where I think your gripe isn't with MTV. I think your gripe is with Madonna grinding on MTV.
Thank you, Matt from Richland Center. How dare you, Jane?
Matt and Air on Air. Weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
My name is DeMar Hamlin. I play for the Buffalo Bills, and I play safety.
CPR saved my life. I've teamed up with the American Heart Association as a national ambassador to help create a nation of lifesavers, turning bystanders into lifesavers. through CPR education and access to AEDs. Nearly 3 out of 4 cardiac arrests that don't happen in hospitals happen in homes. Join me to ensure everyone has the chance to live longer, healthier lives. Visit heart.org/nation.
Jay Matt Nair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, our friend and colleague Todd Alba joins us after 9:30 to break down the news in Wisconsin. Terry Barr in hour number 2 for Audio Sorbet. Don't miss it.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
Brewers were winners in Atlanta last night, 3-1. The one for Atlanta was a first pitch home run given up by Quinn Priester. After that, he only gave up one other hit. The three was thanks to Isaac Collins hitting a 3-run homer. So again, 3-1, Brewers over Atlanta. Trevor McGill picked up his 25th save of the season. Quinn Priester, 10 wins in a row now, something virtually unheard of in starting pitching for the Brewers. What is it, like the third time that's been done ever? Freddie Peralta pitching tonight as the Brewers continue their series in Atlanta. The pregame begins at 5:40 on Civic Media stations across Wisconsin. Head to the website to learn which ones are carrying the Brewers again tonight and tomorrow evening. And then they're off before they come home for a series against the New York Mets. We're going to talk a bit about the 60th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act and the way that it continues to be under assault and its potential impact on Wisconsin. We're going to talk about that with Civic Media News Director Sholly Pittman, but we haven't really talked to her yet on this program. So we're going to talk to Sholly about Sholly first. Sholly, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me. I'm okay. Mm-hmm. It's an hour earlier than Matt and Aaron Air, so, you know, getting used to that.
Well, I mean, we didn't ask you to be here at 6:36. 8:36, I think, works all right for you.
Yeah.
It is one of the struggles of this program. The struggle is real. But in being extended to 9 o'clock, we now get a chance for the non-early birds to kind of be here along with us as well. So let's find out more for folks that may not have heard you on Jane's show or elsewhere on the Civic Media Radio Network, because you haven't been here for very long. But you are a recognized radio presence in the Madison area. So tell us your path from wherever you want to start to right here where we are now.
Well, thank you so much. In Madison, definitely, yes. I come most recently from WORT, a community radio station in Madison with a 50-year history. I was news and talk director there. I oversaw about 150 volunteers a week and some staff. But WORT has a long history in Madison. I was many things at WORT in my time there. I spent about a dozen years there in total. I was everything from a punk DJ to a news reporter to news director. Before that, I, you know, worked a little bit, interned at Wisconsin Public Radio, worked at the student radio station when I was in college. So I've sort of been doing radio since I was 18. I would have done it earlier, like some other folks here at this network, but I didn't have access.
That's all interesting, but we have to seize on the most important of those, punk DJ, and what it was that you especially liked or continue to like to this day. Or was it all just a shift that you did and turns out you're not a punk devotee after all?
You know, it was a time in my life where that was applicable. Still like punk music, but I frequently irritated the music director by going outside the bounds of the format. So it was punk and experimental music. It was 2 a.m. to 5 a.m.
I was going to say, I wasn't aware that there were guidelines around punk that would get you in trouble, but apparently so.
Well, that was my whole point, isn't the whole gist behind punk music to go outside the bounds?
To be rebellious, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. We're talking to Sholly Pittman. By the way, that's C-H-A-L-I, which means that everybody here mistakenly called you Charlie for like at least your first month here. Is there an origin story on your first name?
Oh, thank you for asking. Yes, I get a lot of Charlies. I'm okay with that, but it is Sholly. My mom, it's not short for anything. My mom likes French.
Okay.
And she was also raised in sort of a Jewish household, so L'chaim. So she took the two and put them together, and she made it up. My full name was supposed to be much longer, with many, like, three middle names, but that didn't fly, so.
Okay. So you didn't feel the need to be, again, continuing on this rebellious streak and taking some other nickname or anything like that? Okay.
I like my first name. I'm okay with it.
Yes, you should. No, that's great. So many stories to cover that you've been covering, but I've been especially interested in the Voting Rights Act because, again, President Lyndon Johnson signed it 60 years ago tomorrow, August 6th, 1965. And, I mean, everybody knows what it was intended to do. It was supposed to make racial discrimination a thing of the past when it comes to American elections, and yet we find ourselves in a far different place than we would have expected to be now with an administration and a U.S. Supreme Court so downright hostile to it. And a lot of the roots for this come from a 2013 Supreme Court decision. It's one of those cases where if you tell people about the Shelby County decision, I mean, there's a sliver of the population that gets all worked up about it. The vast majority go, what? What are you talking about here? So can you take us from like 2013 onward as far as the role of the U.S. Supreme Court in what arguably has been a weakening of the Voting Rights Act?
Yeah, the Voting Rights Act, as you said, one of those landmark pieces of legislation that protect voting rights and that election lawyers talk a lot about and point to. So in 2013, Shelby County v. Holder made a section of the Voting Rights Act unenforceable. And that's Section 5. And the Voting Rights Act is split into sections. But that was the beginning. Several years ago, a separate Supreme Court decision further weakened it, right? And unblocked rules that it prohibits states from creating rules that have a disparate impact on voting. And so in 2021, that further got weakened. But Section 2 is really the part of the Voting Rights Act that remains and is the most kind of powerful part of the Voting Rights Act. It allows folks from communities of color who have historically been discriminated against and had their voting power diluted, it allows them to challenge maps or practices that dilute the power of their vote. And significantly, Section 2 prohibits things like cracking and packing. Have you heard those terms before, Pat?
Cracking and packing, I think more Wisconsinites are familiar with than most other states because they describe different ways that you can gerrymander a political map. And so to bring that to the current day, you had this section of the Voting Rights Act that was especially applicable to the former states of the Confederacy, states in the Deep South, states with a history of racial discrimination. You fast forward to 2013 and the Shelby decision, and you have people saying, oh, we've cured racism. It's all, there's no more racism. We do not need this anymore. These states do not need federal pre-clearance anymore to do the things that they are going to do. Now fast forward 12 more years to the present day, and we're seeing packing and cracking and gerrymandering in Texas on a level I did not think we could ever see in these 60 years of the Voting Rights Act. You have legislators, leaving the state to deny a quorum, similar to what we saw in Wisconsin. And again, I don't think anybody could have predicted this back in 1965, that this would be the world we live in 2025.
You bring up a term, pre-clearance, right? And there are a lot of terminology in election law and a lot of terminology around the Voting Rights Act. So pre-clearance is this idea that states and governments had to get federal approval before changing their voting practices in certain parts that have historically been discriminated against, and especially in parts of the South. Section 5 wasn't necessarily struck down in 2013, but it was made sort of unenforceable. Section 2 was affirmed several years ago in 2023 in another Supreme Court case that allowed or required Alabama to draw new lines. It was kind of a challenge there. But I'm not sure if you're familiar with the name Rick Hassin. He's kind of a big deal in election law. He's a obviously a lawyer and a scholar out of California. And he's warning in a new article at Slate that the U.S. Supreme Court appears poised to strike down Section 2 in Louisiana v. Calais next year. Now, that Supreme Court case has already been heard. What's interesting about that is it's going to be re-argued before the court in their kind of next term, likely with the decision next summer. It's not that usual for the U.S. Supreme Court to ask for cases to be re-argued. So we have to kind of wonder what's going on there.
Yeah. So all of this, I'm sure, has folks in Wisconsin saying, well, what does that have to do with elections here moving forward? But whether we're talking about redistricting or the photo ID law or other areas, what this court has been doing in terms of the Voting Rights Act and what this Congress president could be doing, Wisconsin elections could be impacted in a couple of different ways, couldn't they?
You know, it could, right? We have parts of Wisconsin that have been historically been discriminated against, especially in the Milwaukee area. The Milwaukee area has been subject to Voting Rights Act violations under Section 2, with the claim that it was their voting strength was diluted. So this was part of the Fair Maps battle. You know, we have different maps now, but everywhere could be subject to this, right? It's still a really important part of legislation.
Yeah. And again, it's not just the Voting Rights Act. There are other ways that voting rules are being impacted. You know, here in Wisconsin, there was that constitutional amendment last fall that simply changed one word, changed the word from every to only. And that changed the way that voting in Wisconsin deals with whether people, you know, with documentation of citizenship, you know, can vote or not. We probably take it for granted in journalistic circles, Sholly, but it's amazing the power of changing a single word, what it can have on, you know, the true impact of a state law or a constitutional amendment.
Yeah, language matters. It changed the phrase every U.S. citizen aged 18 or older who resides in election may vote, and to only U.S. citizens aged 18 or older can vote. Now, why does that matter? What does that fundamentally change? Well, there's no municipality in Wisconsin that I'm aware of that allows folks who are either under 18 or who are non-U.S. citizens to vote. But there are instances in other municipalities outside of Wisconsin that do allow folks to say, let's say you're not a U.S. citizen, to vote in a local school board election, for example. And this makes it harder for any municipality to make those types of decisions in the future.
Right. And for those who wonder, well, why would that be the case? Those municipalities in those other states have said, hey, they may not be documented citizens, but their kids still go to our schools. Why shouldn't they get a say in who is running those schools? So in those places, they've allowed non-U.S. citizens to vote in those local elections. But this constitutional amendment would, or this change in the Constitution, I should say, would preclude that from ever being able to happen here in Wisconsin. We are talking to Civic Media News Director Sholly Pittman, and it's a discussion some of us will continue in a bit. Others will be taking a break for a local update. And then tomorrow, of course, we'll have our homeroom segment where we will be talking all about what the Green Bay City Council and School Board did to have greater taxpayer transparency when it comes to the Voucher Schools program. So tune in for that tomorrow on these mornings powered by Up North News here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Kreitlow.
As Wisconsin is cheering on Bucky Badger. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. With small ships that bring travelers closer to the destination, there's more time to explore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive, with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
My part-time service in the Army National Guard makes it possible for me to be more for the community I call home. My training helps me at work when I lead by example. The Army National Guard has taught me the value of showing respect to those I come in contact with each day. My service also allows me to be there for my community in ways others can't. I help my hometown recover after nature strikes. My service in the Army National Guard allows me to keep my country and those I care about safe from threats. I also work with a network of professionals that help me succeed and accomplish the mission. Plus, the Army National Guard education benefits make getting a higher education a reality. Being an Army National Guard soldier makes living and serving in my community more rewarding every day. Learn how you, too, can live and serve part-time, close to home, by visiting NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
Where working people come to talk. It's the Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join me for an honest approach to the issues American working families care about. No talking points, no focus groups. Get ready for a heavy dose of democracy, fairness, grit, and no apologies. It's current affairs from a working class labor perspective. Facts are center, science is real, and everyone gets a seat at the table. The Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life.
SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
Frank Anderson, who is the founder of Wisconsinology.com. You were great in the documentary. That's really exciting.
I'm really not as a documentary filmmaker because I get bored so quick. You have to really dig into your subject, and you got to show up every day, sometimes for years.
Yeah.
To let a story unfold or to find a story. I'm good for one day.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. As Wisconsin is hitting the road on your Harley. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WAUK. My name is Greg Bach. I am back, and here's what's going on in southeastern Wisconsin today. If I had a nickel for every time someone said, well, it's just too divided out there, I'd have a lot of nickels. And I feel like one way that the narrative is written to divide us even further is on the spending of money, making it seem like the bigger the city, the bigger the money problems. And it's usually blamed on one side versus another side. But here today is Dan Schaefer to talk about Waukesha County, which is a wealthy county here in the state of Wisconsin and also considered to be very conservative, and what they're doing to make ends meet in times of financial upheaval.
Right now, though, we're recombobulating with Dan Schaefer, Civic Media's political editor, creator of the Recombobulation Area. Let's talk a little bit about communities are still having money problems.
Yeah. There is a couple stories over the last couple of weeks from the Waukesha Freeman, terrific publication, that has reported about various communities in Waukesha County, one of the wealthiest counties in the state, looking to raise taxes in the form of a wheel tax. The reason for this being, the state is still not funding municipalities the way that they should.
Adequately
the way they should. And, you know, even after the shared revenue reform bill from 2 years ago that really injected a lot of funds and really pulled a lot of communities back from making deep, deep cuts across the board, now, and you know, and Milwaukee was always kind of scapegoated for this, and like, oh, but they can't manage their finances.
Exactly.
And whatever.
Yes.
Well, are we talking about that when it's Elm Grove or New Berlin?
Oh, those spendthrifts in Elm Grove.
They just can't keep a budget. But I think this is, it just goes to show that we still are not adequately funding local government if we are seeing wealthy communities like this say that, hey, we need to raise a wheel tax in order to pay for basic services. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, I think a lot of leaders in Madison kind of spiked the football and said, hey, we're done after the shared revenue reform bill.
No, isn't this great? It's all finished.
Exactly. And it really wasn't. And it was like, oh, you know, the way I looked at it was like, this is, you need to pass this so you can live to fight another day. Well, that other day
is already here.
Yeah. Because they did not go far enough. The Republicans who crafted that bill, you know, Tony Evers proposed far more funding for local governments in the plan that he put forward and that Republicans rejected. And then they kind of built their own as they became similar to how they've approached the budget over and over again. And it just hasn't done enough. So I think we're. And according to this article in the Waukesha Freeman, a growing number of Wisconsin municipalities have already gone down this road of raising a wheel tax. According to the Wisconsin Policy Forum, revenue from local wheel taxes has tripled since 2017, with 13 counties and 48 cities and villages now charging the annual vehicle fee. Fitchburg will join the list August 1st. Nina plans to follow January 1st. So this is a problem everywhere. Around the state.
Not just Democratic
areas.
It's
not just Democratic areas. It's not Milwaukee or Madison mismanaging funds. Yeah, of course. We want to keep people accountable. There, there have been problems over the years.
Without a doubt.
But you also, I think it also goes to show that those, that criticism of Milwaukee was wildly overblown. And I think, you know, Milwaukee had to institute a sales tax to raise some of the things. All these other places, having no other options, are going to have to institute a wheel tax because we are really don't give local communities a lot of options. So we're seeing these referendums spike all over the state for school funding. We're seeing wheel taxes for local government funding. And then we have the state government. Just not doing enough.
Yes, yes. And I referenced this off air, our conversation yesterday with Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski. She was talking about the impacts that the big bill for billionaires is going to have on our programs here in the state, and that money is going to have to be found by the state government. And if we know one thing about Madison is they don't want to pay for everything, anything, because they're like, hey, we have $4.3 billion in surplus. Let's just look at that money. It's very, very pretty. But I had always contended that, you know, the sales tax of Milwaukee raising that, I thought was something that should have happened a long time ago. Mm-hmm. It was at 5.5, then went to 5.6. But that's not enough for a city of that size and wants to be of that value. And even though it's 7.2 or 7.5 right now, that's still pretty decent for a city. And so they're going to make their money how they see fit. For me, growing up in Waukesha, I always was like, I didn't realize we were one of the wealthiest counties in the state. But I also feel that this is another example, Jane, that you talk about, we always talk about, of no long-term planning. Mm-hmm. Now you have to institute a tax, and people hate that. And politicians have to run on that over their back saying, well, you raised my taxes. And we're like, yeah, because we had to survive.
Well, you know, I'm going to channel Ron Johnson.
Oh, yes, yes.
Wisconsin Senior Center.
Do you feel smarter right now?
You know what the elegant solution would be? If just all of us took turns like driving a truck or picking up garbage in our communities or taking this section of road is mine for this week of the winter and we'll plow it. Mm. That's kind of the elegant solution.
Personal responsibility.
Personal responsibility, yes. Folks. Come on, let's step up and do it for nothing. Come on.
Well, they don't do fiscal responsibility anymore, so it's got to be about personal responsibility. It's about personal obligation now. That's what it is. It's are you going to help us?
They passed a bill that cut government and grew the deficit at the same time. Good job.
So smart. You know, so smart.
You can't call them the party of fiscal responsibility anymore. But I think this is going to this what we're seeing in Elm Grove, what we're seeing in New Berlin now. You know, other examples like I mentioned, Nina, Fitchburg, all over the state. It's going to be a problem. We need to address it.
Yeah, we need to work together. Yeah.
We have $4 billion surplus, but it's Robin Voss's money, and he's going to keep it there.
And before we go any further, did I forget to mention that Dan Schaefer is Civic Media's political editor and the founder of the multi-award-winning Recombobulation Area? Well, he is. And you can subscribe to the Recombobulation Area right now for a very, very low price. And that way you're going to get all the great news from your community as well as supporting local journalism, which is in high demand right now. You can also go to civicmedia.us/news to find all the stories he's working on, listen to his Recombobulation Minutes, as well as all of the other stories our great journalists are working on from every corner of the state. Stick around, because after Pat, we have Matinair on Air with Jane Matinair and me. And today we welcome Todd Alba as well as Terry Barr. They're our Civic Media friends, and they're coming on the show to have great discussions about what's going on their shows, so you don't want to miss it. You're listening to WAUK's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. For WAUK and Civic Media, I'm Greg Bach. Have a wonderful Tuesday. I'll talk to you tomorrow. It's 8:59.
This is 540 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
CBS News Brief. Texas state Republicans have voted to have a group of Democrats arrested and brought home after they fled the state to protest a plan to redraw the congressional map. U.S. Congresswoman Jasmine Crockett.
The Democrats are not going to stand for this any longer. We know that we are standing for the people. And so long as we stand for the people, I absolutely believe the people are going to stand for us.
Last night in Nebraska. Tax the rich! Chants of tax the rich at Mike Flood's town hall in Lincoln. To that, the Republican says.
When President Trump passed the 2017 tax cuts, we saw explosive growth in this country.
A report from the Coast Guard concludes the implosion of the Titan submersible on the way to the Titanic ruins was preventable, with glaring disparities between written safety protocols and actual practices. All five people on board the Titan were killed. CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.